Blog Talk Radio.
Self-respect, intellect, increasing our knowledge to keep ourselves in check.
Positivity is all we need. Together we will
I definitely appreciate you spending this first Sunday of 2015 listening to the Rise TV show. And it's about a new year, but we're also talking about different events that are going to be recognized and remembered this year in 2015 and the impact that they had back then and the way it affects us now. There's so many different social and cultural events that happened 20 years ago, 50 years ago, back 150 years ago, starting with the Civil War. And I want to just do a history lesson right now. It's time for us to get out the history books and see where we are, because if we don't know our history, we're doomed to repeat it. And I'm a little under the weather. My throat's a little scratchy, a little sore, but it's okay. I'm going to still go on and push on and make sure that everybody knows where we are, where we stand, and what we need to do in the future. And I think it's important and critical that we discuss this, because there's certain aspects in American history that have a profound impact on even the way we are now. Take going back 150 years ago, the official end of the Civil War and the assassination of President Lincoln. Now, do we still feel effects of that? Of course we do. At that point, that was the ratification of the 14th Amendment, officially, making all citizens that were born and all the citizens of all those that are born here in the United States. And that has a very big, profound impact right now. You figure that was done 150 years ago, back in 1865, yet and still we are fighting over immigration laws and illegal immigration now. The Dream Act was a very big part of pushing forward, because it did expand a lot on the 14th Amendment when in regards to rules that those that were born in this country are considered citizens even when their parents were born in another country. And that's critical today in regards to how people that are coming over from other countries are viewed, how people from other countries are interacting when it comes down to their children who were born here in the United States. Now, this is a bill that was done 150 years ago. This is something that you would think in those 150 years would be a thing of the past, but here we are trying to fight for the rights of those who are born in this country, even though their parents were born in another country, mostly in Central, South, and Latin America. This is a critical aspect going into 2015 that we need to look at and address before things get completely out of hand. History is something that we need to fall back on. History is something that we need to learn from. So the take from the 14th Amendment, the take from the end of the Civil War, was supposed to be the era of Reconstruction. And after 150 years, we're still trying to reconstruct things. The cities that were segregated back then are still separate in a lot of ways now economically. The way the politics and the political scale that happened during that Reconstruction era is still fighting a daunting task now of coming together. Reconstruction brought a lot of African slaves into the forefront politically. In 1865, there were three times as many people of color, and as in regards to freed African slaves, in the House. The House was almost predominantly from the southern areas of African descent. Now you look at the Senate, especially. There's only one or two African Americans in the Senate. Based that from 1865, there was 14. So that's telling you right there that 150 years later, things have not changed much when it comes down to the social and economical disparities that were trying to be fought then and are still being fought now, especially in a lot of large areas in the South. When it comes down to representation of the people, you have a lot of people of Latin descent, a lot of people of descent of South American countries that are not being represented in those southern states, in states like Nevada and Arizona and New Mexico, you know, the deep southern Mississippi, Alabama. They're not being represented. And that is still a struggle, and that is turned 150 years after the 14th Amendment, after the Civil War, after the assassination of President Lincoln and the ratification of the Emancipation Proclamation. All of that is still being fought even as we speak. Then you move fast forward to 60 years ago. 60 years ago, 1955, Rosa Parks was on a bus in Alabama, refused to get up from her seat, caused the Montgomery bus boycott of 1955. That was 60 years ago. And still we find ourselves boycotting transportation, boycotting, you know, rights for workers, a lot of these different protests that are going on for Walmart, you know, Walmart and Target getting the rights to a union and the right proper work and proper work wages. All these things were being fought 60 years ago in the beginning of the Civil Rights Movement. And civil rights is still being fought and lost. A lot of battles are being lost, a lot of battles are being won to this day as we speak. The civil liberties of people of color, civil liberties of women, people of certain sexual orientation and religious beliefs are all being fought even as we speak, because of the fact that what was done back then in 1955, the protests and the boycotts, and even eventually 10 years later in 1965, 50 years ago with the ratification of the Voting Rights Act, is still not being fulfilled. When you have people fighting to vote, people going to the polls and they're forced to show some sort of identification or multiple forms of identification in order to vote, for people who want to have a say in their local council and their local communities, and they're being pushed out and shoved out because they don't represent who the council wants to represent. And if we continue to sit back and let the political structure stay how it is, then it's going to be a problem for another 50 years from now. And that is the big issue that we have right now. This Rise TV Show, Blog Talk Radio, Toyland Productions, Toyland Entertainment, and we're talking about it's our anniversary, New Year's with the same struggle, and that's basically what is going on right now. We have all these different legal and social and economical battles that we're still fighting that appeared to be handled and appear to be taken care of 150 years ago, 100 years ago, 50 years ago, but it's still ongoing as of today. When you look at the Montgomery bus boycott and you look at how it impacted the economic structure of the city of Montgomery and Alabama in whole, and began the movement of protest in this country, followed by a lot of the movements that happened later on in the 50s and early 60s. And you see where we are now as a country, see where we are now in our communities, where protests are still going on, protests are still going strong. Now, that particular boycott went on for over a year, up to the point where they had to cave in. can we sustain a protest in this day and age for that long? We're such a Twitter nation. We're such a short Instagram society. Everything has to be instant. Everything has to be fast. If things aren't done fast and results are not done, then we move on to something else. And that's what I've been saying for weeks, a big concern when it comes down to these protests. Because you look back 60 years ago, they were not backing down. You look back 50 years ago in Selma, Alabama, they were not backing down. They went, they pushed forward through the cops, through the dogs, through the water hoses to get the results that they wanted, whether it's from a social standpoint or from an economical standpoint. These battles were fought to create equality, equal wages for people, equal opportunities in the workplace, equal opportunities in to buy homes and to vote and to live in the society. To this day, we're still fighting those battles, but we're not fighting them in the same fervor and the same energy and the same enthusiasm as our parents and our grandparents did 50, 60 years ago. And this is something that we have to figure out. We have to take a look back at where we are as a society and see what we need to do in regard to the movement, because the movement is still there. The movement is still prevalent. And also, we got to look at 50 years ago was also another movement that spawned in our communities with the assassination of Hassan Sheikh Shabazz, also known as Malcolm X. That was 50 years ago in February. Now, what impact did that have? That sparked an impact and a movement throughout the African-American communities that we can't stand for this anymore in a civil, in a nonviolent matter. It was time to start a new revolution, a different revolution, where voices were heard, but there was a little bit more of a vocal and physical presence that was created with the assassination of Malcolm X. That movement sparked a lot of different organizations like SNCC, like the Black Panther Party, that wanted to take another stand, go to the next level when it comes down to the revolution, when it comes down to the movement. And we see glimpses of that now with the protests in Ferguson, with the protests in New York, here in D.C., throughout what we're seeing. We're seeing a more vocal presence. We're seeing a more physical presence, and that was impacted greatly in memoriam and in the response to the assassination of Malcolm X. And there's something that needs to be continued. It's something that needs to be reviewed when it comes down to that. Are we taking a stand for the right reasons? Do we have leaders out there that are just out for political gain, or are there leaders out there that are for the movement? At that point, we had some very strong leaders. We had Dr. King. We had Malcolm X. We had Medgar Evers. We had people like Abernathy and Adam Clayton Powell on the legal side. We had a lot of people that were on the uprise, like a Marion Barry and the like, and Huey Newton and Bobby Seale, that were really trying to step up and make moves, positive aspect in our communities. But do we have that now? Can we say that Al Sharpton is the voice of our community? Can we say that Jesse Jackson is the voice of our community? Can we say that from a legal standpoint, Eric Holder or Gloria Allred are the pioneers and the standing points for our communities and our economical and social standing now? Or are they out for political gain? When you look at someone like Gloria Allred fighting for women's rights, and it seems like she's more like of an ambulance chaser now than she ever was. Anytime a woman is fighting for something, she's the first one on the next plane to that city just to jump on TV to say, "Oh, I'm here with her." And people feel the same way about Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson and those type of leaders, because it seems like the politics that they're fighting for on a social and economical scale has been turned into a money-making power for them. So it's not really about the movement. It was about the money. When you looked at we look at those leaders in the past, we look at Malcolm X, we look at Martin Luther King, we look at, you know, all those leaders at that time, Abernathy and all of them, they were more for the movement, they were more for the people. It wasn't about the money. They didn't live in the fanciest of places. They didn't have the nice cars and the jets and all that. They did have funds, of course. Of course they had money. But it was about the movement. It was about everything that they were fighting for, not the resources they have to fight with. And that's the key thing that we don't see at this point now. And this was things that happened 50, 60 years ago. These were incidents that were happening at that time. So you would think in 50 or 60 years there would have been someone that would step up to take on the reins and say, we got to continue the movement, we got to keep the spirit going. But we have not seen that person or group of people that have taken that stand. 50 years ago, the NAACP was a very strong organization that was fighting for the rights of the poor, fighting for the rights of people of color, fighting for the rights of those who were not wanting to go into the fight. Speaking of going into the fight, at that time, of course, was Vietnam. 50 years ago, 1965, was the beginning of U.S. involvement in the Vietnam War. 25 years ago was the start of us going into Iraq and Afghanistan, Operation Desert Storm. So going into the fight, we are still trying to figure out exactly what's going on, and now we're finally officially pulled all of our troops out of Afghanistan from a military standpoint. Of course, there's some peacekeepers out there, but from a military movement standpoint, we finally, 5 years, pulled all of our troops out of that region. So what did we learn from Vietnam that wasn't brought forward in Afghanistan and Iraq? Because Vietnam should have been a sign that you have to go into battle with a purpose. You have to go into battle knowing your goal and sticking to your goal, and once you accomplish your goal, it is time to pull back and pull out. Vietnam was a war, a very deadly war, a war that people feel at the time was important, but looking back, people see that it wasn't a sensible war. It wasn't, no, not all wars are sensible, of course, but there has to be some sort of purpose to it. And Vietnam should have been a sign when we went into Enduring Freedom, went to Desert Storm, we went into, you know, all these battles that we've had recently, the War on Terror, that there had to be a clear, defined purpose. And once we saw that clear, defined purpose, we go in there, we attack, we do what we have to do militarily, and then pull out before a lot of collateral damage come in. And it seemed like the political structure and the government back in 1965 and back in 1990 and with us recently did not take that into consideration. What we did, we went in there for other purposes. At that point, LBJ had an election to win. And the best way to save yourself is a war. 1990, George Bush had an election to win. Best way to do it, start a war. However, in either case, it did not help their cause. So that's telling you something right there, that is that there are these ulterior motives that they have when they start these wars. You got to look at the underlying effect. You got to look at the way Boeing back in 1965 went from a small-time military entity to a large, growing, and multi-billion-dollar facet of the federal government. If you look at back in 1990, 25 years ago, where Northrop Grumman was developing, was big, but then it became an important financial burden of our government. And this spawned because wars had to be fought in order to try to win some votes, in order to try to generate some money, in order to try to help the lobbyists, because there's nothing more profitable for a country than to be in a war, because you're always going to get funding, you're always going to get approved for things, because you need to make sure the military base are taken care of, you need to make sure that the resources are handled. So that's always a good way for people to make money, start a war. And that's what happened 50 years ago, and we repeated it 20 years ago, and then we repeated it again 10 years ago. All this, mission accomplished, was 10 years ago. But where are we now? Was the mission really accomplished? What was the mission? Did we take on everything we need to take on? Now you got ISIS going strong and building out there, but we're pulling out saying that it's not our problem right now, hands off. So we really didn't go with a clear goal, and we didn't really accomplish the goal that was put forth in our view to accomplish. And this is the Rise TV show, Blog Talk Radio, Toilet Productions, Toilet Entertainment, and we're talking about New Year's with the same struggles. Where are we socially, where are we politically, where are we economically, to the point where we can truly say that we learned from our history? Now, 20 years ago, in October, I remember coming down here, actually from New York, to go to visit the Million Man March. The Million Man March was supposed to be an event to bring unity and solidarity to African-American men. Then you see, 20 years later, we fast forward to Chicago and Cleveland and New Orleans and Houston, all these places where we see numbers and scores of black men being killed by black men. And black lives do matter, and we can't continue to ignore what is going on because of the fact that we were supposed to come together. We were supposed to try to pull resources together, build franchises, build communities, and work together to build these communities. But at the same time, what we're doing now, we're going the opposite direction of what the Million Man March was about. We're steady killing each other senselessly and coming to an uproar, of course, when police brutality comes into play. But we have to take in consideration what's going on in our neighborhoods as well. We have to take a look at that and look at ourselves, look at within, and see what we need to do to build our communities better. And all these things have had an impact on our history, on our present, and eventually on our future unless we start making changes now. So where do we go from here? What do we do? We have to take all the lessons that we learn from the past, all the lessons that we learn from the Civil Rights era, from the Civil War, from the Vietnam War, from the Operation Desert Storm, all these things we have to take in consideration and make sure, one, we're putting the right people in office. I can't stress that enough. That makes the right people being put in office. The new Congress goes into Capitol Hill tomorrow. And what can we expect from them? You know, we say, oh, we need change because things weren't working out right. You know, gas prices are low. Unemployment is lower. The war is essentially over, but we feel things aren't going the way we need to go right now. So we made so many changes that we may have opened up a Pandora's box of reversing a lot of the legislation that I was just talking about, the 14th Amendment, the Voting Rights Act. All those things can be reversed very quickly because we wanted to look at change instead of looking at history and looking at what's been going on in historically when it comes down to the economic structure that we have. Because we didn't do that, we have a bigger problem on our hands, and we're going to be fighting and going right back into the reverse cycle of where we were maybe 10, 15 years ago. And that's not the way it should be. But we're stuck with it now. The bed's been made. We have to line it and hope that things work out for the benefit of the community, for the benefit of our country. And once again, this is Blog Talk Radio, Toilet Productions, Toilet Entertainment, just the Rise TV show. Before we sign off, I just wanted to mention another aspect of history, American history, that a piece of that American history that we lost today. And it's from the sports world. Stuart Scott passed away today at the age of 49 of cancer. And people will ask, okay, what does Stuart Scott have to do with history? But what he did, he changed the face of broadcast journalism, especially on television broadcast journalism. At the time, ESPN was predominantly run, as far as from a journalistic standpoint, by Caucasian men. They were the only ones that were really getting the headlines, you know, Rich Eisen, the Stuart Scotts, Keith Olbermann. They were the ones that were headlining SportsCenter, which is the flagship show, which is their number one bread and butter, the main watch of ESPN. And they had a couple women in there, Hannah Storm and Robin Roberts. Hannah Storm was involved with journalism. Robin Roberts was a former athlete. in journalism. So they were still active in the sports world. There wasn't really a true American male journalist in the ESPN world until Stuart Scott came along. And Stuart Scott not only came in there and in 95 and changed the game with just his presence, but he changed the game with his style. He changed it to the point where he was using the special catchphrases and things like that to add an extra element to his reporting broadcasting. It made a difference and impact on not only sports, where now we see every sports journalist from New York to L.A. using some of the same style and tactics that Stuart Scott introduced to the country. But now you see more African-American male journalists throughout sports stations and TV networks across the country. You see even newscasters taking a more relaxed approach, but basically bringing their own style, bringing their own touch, bringing their own flavor to the broadcast. And that was not done 20 years ago. It may look like stick now because everybody's done it, but that was so innovative at that time that people didn't know how to handle it. People were trying to get him off the air because they didn't understand what he was doing. People are always afraid of what they don't understand. That's why you look at all these elements of history. You look at the Million Man March. People didn't understand that. Look at the Vietnam War. People didn't understand that. The Voting Rights Act and the March on Selma, Montgomery boycott, even the end of the Civil War. People didn't understand what was going on. People were afraid of what they don't understand. So that's why I did want to mention Stuart Scott today, because he did have, in essence, an impact on American society when it comes down to journalism, when it comes down to broadcasting, as people say about Walt Winchell, as people say about Tom Brokaw or Edward R. Murrow or Walter Cronkite. These people had their own style, had their own personality, changed the game, and he was a game changer as well. So definitely rest in peace to Stuart Scott. Then this is the Rod Stevens Show, Blog Talk Radio, Twin Life Productions, Twin Entertainment, and as always, I want to thank you for taking these 30 minutes of your time each and every week to listen to what's going on with our community. I appreciate you being with me while my voice is weak. The spirit is strong, and I want to make sure that we were able to come together and talk about some of the things in history that we have to look at in order to present a better 2015 than what we had in 2014. We always want to go into a new year bringing bigger and better things. So even if 2014 looked good economically, even though there was improvements on things, certain things, when it comes down to people taking a stand socially, people taking a stand economically, there are still so many things that need to be done and so many changes that need to be made. So now we got to look at 2015 as that year to make those changes, to progress on what we learned in 2014. And also, I do want to mention, of course, we're sponsored by Tranquil Mind by Rob Massage and Wellness, and also to tune in to Love Talk tomorrow. We are talking about, as always, talking about relationships. We're talking about intimacy in relationships. We're talking about how that has an impact our relationships with each other. So not only do we need to work on relationships in our communities, we need to work on relationships with each other. And that's what the Rod Stevie Show, that's what Love Talk is about each and every week. So once again, this is Mr. Rod Stevie, Rod Stevie Show, Blog Talk Radio, Toyland Productions, Toyland Entertainment. And until next time, we'll talk.
Self-respect, intellect.